The Mass Movement. In the wake of the 1913 woman suffrage procession in Washington, there was an emboldened spirit in the suffrage movement and the art that it inspired. There was a sense that the energy and urgency present at the procession was gaining momentum. New suffrage publications created fresh outlets for suffrage artists, which increased their output. In addition, as the argument for women's suffrage was no longer new, women having made the case for suffrage during the preceding decades, the movement now entered a new phase in which it assumed a broader awareness of the issues. The combination of these factors resulted in a greater complexity in suffrage art made after 1913, reflecting a palpable new passion and determination in the movement and a sense that victory was inevitable. Increasingly, by contrast, the opposition was seen as old-fashioned, clinging desperately to outdated views. A profusion of suffrage art was created in the years after the suffrage procession, much of it faithful to the tradition of earlier suffrage artists. A familiar kind of image is typified by the postcard image by Emily Hall Chamberlain, figure 76, which shows Columbia and Uncle Sam as children. Uncle Sam declares, "She's good enough for me." This card was part of a collection that set the suffrage debate among children to diffuse the issue's tensions, while also making the argument that women's suffrage was not a threat to men. As these familiar tropes continued, the emergence of new outlets for suffrage art resulted in tremendous artistic innovation. Publications like the National Woman's Party's newspaper, The Suffragist, created by Alice Paul in 1913, published cartoons and illustrations in addition to essays and news stories. It also notably served as a platform for the artist Nina Allender, one of the most important suffrage cartoonists of the early 20th century. Allender produced more than 200 cartoons for The Suffragist, introducing a new manner of visual representation for propaganda serving the women's suffrage movement. There was an immediacy and realism to Allender's images that, combined with the charisma of her protagonists, made them not just appealing, but also quite persuasive. In The Inspiration of the Suffrage Workers from 1914, figure 77, Allender shows a young mother standing on a dirty street in front of an overflowing garbage can, holding her young child as her other child plays with a cat. In spite of the squalid conditions of the woman's surroundings, she is not depicted as a pathetic figure. She looks frankly at the viewer, resolute rather than resigned. In another artist's hands, this subject might have been portrayed with pathos veering into sentimentality. Allender, while sympathetic, does not attempt to wring pity from the image. Instead, she empowers the mother, who appears resilient and ready to fight for her children. Paired with the caption, "Votes for Women," the image suggests a simple solution to her problem. With the power of the vote, she could improve her family's condition. Allender's 1914 illustration, "Child Saving is Woman's Work," figure 78, strikes a similar tone. The illustration shows women leading a large group of children towards safety, away from a cluster of smoking factories in the background. These children are literally being rescued from lives of misery and exploitation. Allender extended the factories beyond the page's edge, and the line of children seems also to infinitely continue, referencing the enormity of the problem of child exploitation, a very real problem, as millions of children were being exploited in grueling jobs across the country by 1910. Allender employs the trope of woman as inherently maternal to show that allowing women to vote would help children survive and thrive. Allender posits an easily won argument in this image, once again representing women as more than just sentimental ideals. Her subjects are instead actual women getting things done. Allender also created allegorical illustrations, as in her 1914 Call to the Women Voters, figure 79, which borrows from the bugler tradition imported from the UK. It depicts an allegorical female figure in classical robes trumpeting a clarion call to women to join the cause. In a later illustration, The Spirit of 76 On to the Senate, figure 80, she borrows from that same allegorical tradition, but instead uses real women who seem to answer the earlier illustration's call by beating drums, playing a fife, and waving a flag emblazoned with constitutional amendment. Allender's women represented the young and zealous women of a new generation determined to wait no longer for a just right, as one of Allender's contemporaries explained. It was Mrs. Allender's cartoons, more than any other one thing, that in the newspapers of this country began to change the cartoonist's idea of a suffragist. The Allender woman was purposeful. She was moral. She was maternal. And she was accomplished and intelligent. Most importantly, she was willing to take charge and better her world, in spite of the obstacles in her path. By bringing women like this into the public eye, Allender played a crucial role in changing public opinion of women and womanhood at a crucial moment in the suffrage movement. She normalized the idea of a forceful young woman changing the world for the good of the people, marking yet another decisive step toward women's suffrage. Nell Brinkley was another prominent woman cartoonist who made her mark on the graphic arts in the early 20th century while also affecting the public view of women. Her prolific output reached Americans all across the country. Brinkley's images featured free-spirited young women who were distinguished by their voluminous curly hair. Her Three Graces of 1916, figure 81, which is patriotic yet eschews sentimentality, is an icon of suffrage imagery. The Three Graces are clearly identified. Suffrage looks into the distance and holds suffragist literature. Preparedness, front and center, stands ready to face whatever may come her way. And Americanism, bedecked in stars and stripes and holding sparklers, is an embodiment of patriotic celebration. Perhaps the most delightful aspect of these allegorical figures is how they are made to look like real-life modern American women, unwavering and resolute. The self-possessed, curly-haired woman of Brinkley's images, who came to be known as the Brinkley Girl, took American culture by storm. She was incorporated into theatrical performances, she became the subject of popular songs, and she inspired a fashion for curled hair. Other women cartoonists who had already broken through the male-dominated industry continued to have an important role in the changing discourse about women's suffrage. Blanche Ames Ames's Anti-Allies and the Dog, figure 82, for example, was published in the Woman's Journal and Suffrage News in 1915 and employed a strategy that was increasingly popular in the years after the suffrage procession— attacking the anti-suffragists to reveal their hypocrisy, selfishness, and viciousness. In this cartoon, a suffragist undoubtedly modeled after Inez Milholland Boissevane is riding on a horse draped in a banner reading Progress and carrying a banner reading Woman Suffrage. An anti ties a rope around the hoof of the suffragist's horse, and she and a group of her supporters pull on the rope in the shadows around the corner of a nearby building. Their trickery is contrasted with the nobility of the suffragist. Images like Ames's, in which the anti-suffragists are treated with the same sort of scorn that had previously been leveled at the suffragists, became a favorite motif in the art of this period. By this point, the suffragists had already made, and in many minds won, their arguments. The next step was to examine those who remained stubbornly rooted against suffrage and to expose the flaws in their logic. The cover of the Woman's Journal and Suffrage News featured such a cartoon, figure 83, in 1915. Here, a group of young girls representing the state's already granted suffrage play outside as another young girl peers out of a door being blocked by a stern old woman labeled anti-suffrage. From inside, the caption tells us, those states not yet granted suffrage call out, "Why can't we play too?" The Woman's Journal and Suffrage News published another scathing critique of anti-suffragists with its At the Sepulchre by Frederica S. Palmer, figure 84, which shows justice weeping at a sepulchre as a personification of greed leans a massive legislative bill that denied workers a lesser workload on the back of a small child. Other images took a more lighthearted approach to the anti-suffragists. Puck magazine was a popular outlet for this kind of image. An anti-suffrage viewpoint, figure 85, calls out the hypocrisy of philandering men, while making the polls attractive to the anti-suffragists, figure 86, shows a group of lazy, rich women drinking and playing cards, only casting their votes because the ballot box is brought to them. Another image, figure 87 from Puck, shows an opera singer labeled anti performing in the spotlight as the political boss conducts her, and a group of nefarious men cheer her on from behind. The Masses magazine published a special suffrage issue in 1917, which includes images such as Stuart Davis's Affecting Types of Suffragists, figure 88, a two-page spread that showed entitled women, in some cases cluelessly addressing working women, saying things like, "We've got better things to do, haven't we?" Similarly, Elizabeth Grieg's cartoon from the same issue shows two entitled women on a park bench, figure 89. One says to the other, "Look at that suffragette, Madge, right out in the street. Wouldn't you think she'd die of shame?" All of these images successfully criticized anti-suffragists as out of step with the times, unconcerned with the problems of others, and selfish. Another popular theme of this period was the concern about suffrage as an issue affecting the domestic realm and its children who were powerless to fight for themselves. The idea of suffrage as a mother's issue was not new, but it did increase in popularity and vigor in these final years of the movement. Indeed, it was the emotional force behind so many of Nina Allender's moving cartoons. An illustration, figure 90, from Puck magazine's special suffrage issue in 1915, 1 year after the start of World War I, shows a mother and children walking through a bombed-out landscape clothed in rags. The caption makes a powerful statement. Who says that war is man's business? Two other images also address this issue. The cover of The Woman Citizen depicted a sword-wielding personification of suffrage protecting a group of small children from a faceless mob of exploiters of children, figure 91. And an NAWSA poster from 1917, What Breaks Up the Home, shows the effects of unjust labor laws on the home, with children shown suffering in poor households and being forced to work, figure 92. The NAWSA even published a pamphlet called Better Babies, dedicated to explaining how women's suffrage would benefit babies and children. It shows statistics on infant mortality rates around the world and argues that a lower mortality rate is linked to countries where women had suffrage. The cover, figure 93, illustrated by Rose O'Neill, famous for her use of babies in suffrage imagery, shows a baby who has dropped a toy as an immense crowd of cartoon germs looks on, ready to engulf it. Many images in this period also borrowed from the energized spirit of the suffrage procession, suffusing their work with an inspirational quality rooted in allegory and patriotism. These images also often incorporated militaristic imagery, in the vein of Nina Allender's The Spirit of 76 On to the Senate. A striking example was made to accompany journalist George Creel's argument in favor of women's suffrage, which was published in a pamphlet by National Woman's Suffrage Publishing in 1915. At the center of the text is a Joan of Arc-like figure, figure 94, dressed in white. She has a sword at her side, but is bound. She reaches her shackled arms out in a gesture that is at once plaintive and resistant. Text and image here are combined to marvelous effect. Another image that speaks to higher ideals while also borrowing patriotic imagery is Taxation Without Representation from the cover of Frank Leslie's illustrated newspaper, figure 95. Here, a suffragist dressed as a revolutionary Minuteman holding a musket wears a Votes for Women sash and stands next to a sign reading, Taxation Without Representation. In these final years after the suffrage procession in Washington, the art produced for the suffrage movement featured more coherent imagery and messaging than ever before, and it addressed sensitive issues that were most likely to affect the average American. In the final push to win the vote, suffrage artists would use the most powerful imagery in their arsenals while also referencing the contemporary events that were so crucial to their cause. But before that last push to victory, the suffragists turned their attention to one last untapped medium, moving pictures.